It is a privilege to be here today, passing on to you not only the teachings of my great teacher, Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, but by passing on the meaning of his teachings, giving meaning to the teachings and practice of all the Buddhist ancestors, all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha. Compassion for beings, such a simple way of pointing to the impulse that lies behind right speech. Compassion for beings, the Zen Buddhist priest Tonin O'Connor reminds us, is how Buddha describes the impulse behind right speech. Compassion for beings is the impulse behind right speech. At the heart of the Eightfold Path is an empathy that understands that we have no separate self and that we draw our being from our intimate relationship with the people who surround us and from the environment in which we live. Even when we think we're not saying anything, we're communicating. So here's how Dogen defines kind speech. Kind speech means when meeting living beings, first of all, to feel compassion for them and to offer caring and loving words. Broadly, it is there being no rude or bad words. In secular society, there are polite customs of asking others if they are well. In Buddhism, there are words, take good care of yourself. And there is the disciple's greeting, how are you? I didn't know that was a disciple's greeting. Speaking with the feeling of compassion for living beings as if they were babies is kind speech. So I'm going to read another translation of that. Different translations just make a different emphasis. Loving speech means whenever meeting sentient beings, first arouse compassionate mind toward them and offer caring and loving words. In general, we should not use violent or harmful words. It is loving speech to speak with the intention of one who compassionately cares for living beings as if they were our own babies. We should know that loving speech arises from a loving mind, and the seed of a loving mind is a compassionate heart. The idea of when meeting living beings, first of all, to feel compassion for them and to offer caring and loving words. For me, it means to stop, check that I feel compassion for the person, make sure compassion is there, and then offer my words. And I've been experimenting with this, actually. I've never liked automatic words. In fact, I used to refuse to participate in them. Like if someone said, how are you? You know, in an inappropriate setting where there was no possible way that I could explain how I am, which they didn't really want to know anyway. So why are they asking? I used to like deliberately ignore, almost shun them, you know, because it was wrong speech, I thought. I thought it was wrong speech, not in a moral sense, but just as a poet, I care very much about words. And it was just misusing words, like, how are you? You know, when there's 10 other people waiting in line, you shouldn't ask me how I am, especially when I might not be fine. And anyway, you understand. Dogen is saying, actually, that how are you from a place of compassion is not automatic. But I've heard it as a substitute for hi for so long that I forget that there's actually in that expression, concern and care for others. Tonan O'Connor continues, Dogen speaks of our pleasure in hearing kind speech. There's also great pleasure in utilizing kind speech. This is true even when stock phrases such as have a nice day, Tonan O'Connor says, reminds me of, she's saying, my conversation with a British theater director who came to direct a play at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater. He was quite taken with our various Americanisms, but one day said to me in disgust, you're always saying have a nice day and it doesn't mean anything. Yes, I responded. And when I've been in England, I have found myself wondering at being called everybody's dear. Yes, these are stock phrases, but they express at least a surface sense of connection, a bit of attention thrown one's way. When I'm checking out groceries at the supermarket, I always say thank you to the person bagging the groceries, and they inevitably respond, have a nice day. In the smallest of ways, we have acknowledged the reality of one another's presence. And this is a tiny exchange of kind speech, however formulaic. And I understand it's very different from my former feeling of how are you? You know, you don't want to really hear how I am. And so why don't you just say hi instead? But she and Dogen are saying that in however minor a way, how are you said to a living being is both respectful and acknowledging of them. But Dogen's idea of stopping and checking, arousing our compassion, which is there, no matter how buried, taking a moment to be sure and then saying something kind seems much more genuine and richer and more whole. Though the words are the same, they're not automatic. A further point is that with the understanding of impermanence and interdependence, we live the elements of the Eightfold Path in acceptance of the ceaseless alteration of the context within which we are bound, not only to all living beings, but also to objects we encounter. And Tonan O'Connor makes the point, with acceptance comes the delight of no longer being alienated, separate and out of control. Now we are included, she says. We are no longer merely separate little drops of water. Now we move with the flow of the mighty stream of life. For me, this is Tonan, the fact that I am included in this universe, that I belong, that I am important to it, is a source of endless wonder and gratitude. It is natural for me to have sympathy with other beings, since we are rowing in this boat together. We all belong. On the path, it is natural that I try to find speech that is appropriate and beneficial, for it is being offered to my companion. Here, I'd like to introduce another word. It's a Dogen word, and the word is entanglement. And picture vines, after living in close proximity with one another, get entangled to the point of inseparability, whether they like it or not. And with humans, there's the stereotypical mother-in-law, daughter-in-law living in the same place, but not really caring for each other and yet having to stay with each other endlessly. This is the usual understanding of the word entanglement, but Dogen instead uses it in a very different way. And this will pertain to speech in a moment. He uses entanglement to talk about the effervescent quality of Dharma transmission, the intimacy of awakening between teacher and disciple. Dogen says, my former master alone first expresses it. The bottle gourd vine entwining the bottle gourd vine is the Buddhas and ancestors investigating the Buddhas and ancestors. The Buddhas and ancestors verifying and according with the Buddhas and ancestors. It is, for example, to transmit the mind by the mind. So Dogen describes this transmission, this verification of awakening, as twining vine, entangling twining vine. And I'd like to propose that this idea of entanglement that Dogen uses for Dharma transmission is also true for ordinary speech and how it pervades our intercourse with living beings. Speech is like our essence. And when we speak, we are pouring our essence, our breath, our finest consciousness out into the ether to be intertwined with the consciousness of others in flux endlessly. Thinking of our speech the way Dogen thinks of entanglement may be a useful tool for our care in crafting it. Another component of right speech is, in addition to right silence, is right hearing. The degree to which we can hear beyond and beneath words is the degree to which our compassion can be activated. The quality of our silence also activates compassion and also is in the mix, intertwined in that same ether. The speech of inanimate things, non-sentient beings, is not in the words, but in their form. Likewise, a tree speaks the Dharma of a tree, a bird of a bird, and if we listen with our eyes and all our senses, we will hear that Dharma of impermanence and interdependence. Buddhists have a very particular and deep understanding of our world as completely interdependent and constantly changing. If we are fully to embody the Eightfold Path, our life must be lived in the light of the deep truth of reality as constant change and as a web of relationships. This is the nature of our true self, ever changing and inextricably entangled in the life of the whole. To manifest this understanding, we arouse compassion and speak to others from the kindness of our hearts. Broadening the context now, I'd like to tell you about a teaching of the Buddha's called Shishobo in Japanese, or the Bodhisattva's Four Embracing Dharmas. The Bodhisattva's Four Embracing Dharmas, which was somehow not mentioned before Dogen. I mean, the Buddha lived in, 2,500 years ago, and Dogen was in the 13th century. But nobody seemed to have noted these four embracing dharmas. And I would like, I'd like to describe two of them. The four embracing dharmas are giving, endearing speech, beneficent conduct, and impartiality. So talking about endearing speech in this context gives it, you can just see it in a larger way. So giving, I think we've talked enough about giving, generosity. That's the first one. And then the second one, loving speech or endearing speech. I'm going to read this again in Okamura Roshi's translation. So we've already had two translations, but I'm going to read what Dogen says. Okamura Roshi makes the best translation. He's such a good translator. So in Okamura Roshi's translation of Dogen, loving speech means whenever meeting sentient beings, first arouse compassionate mind toward them and offer caring and loving words. In general, we should not use violent or harmful words. It is loving speech to speak of the intention of one who compassionately cares for living beings as if they were our babies, our own babies. We should know that loving speech arises from a loving mind, and the seed of a loving mind is a compassionate heart. So then Okamura Roshi comments, and he's very fond of Ryokan, and he's deeply studied Ryokan. And he says that Ryokan hand copied this section of this Shishobo, this section called endearing speech. Ryokan hand copied that. And for him, as a poet and an expert on language, loving speech is his most important bodhisattva practice. In a sense, all of his poems are expressions of his loving mind. For example, he wrote poems about a pine tree that he saw each time he went to this one village, Iwamuro. And actually, they're not poems about the tree. They're poems written for and dedicated to the tree. So here's Ryokan's poem. A lone pine tree stands in the rice field in Iwamuro. Today, seeing it today, it stands completely soaked with rain. Lone pine, if you were a person, I would lend you my bamboo hat and let you wear my straw raincoat. How pitiful, the lone pine tree. Ryokan was very sensitive about our manner of speech. And he wrote several long lists of admonitions regarding speech for himself and for others. And he lists almost 100 points to avoid. For example, talking too much, talking too fast, talking clamorously, et cetera, et cetera. When we reflect on our ways of speaking, we see that without realizing it, we often break the bodhisattva precepts. It is really difficult to practice loving speech. Language is used to communicate and make connections with people, but depending on how we use it, it can also become a device to cut off the connection and raise anger or hatred within other people. We can speak words that differ from our reality and that of others. Today, in our virtual world of personas, we can use words to make ourselves into whoever we want, in whatever situation we want, to impress whoever we think is paying attention. And then we ourselves start believing in our own creations, and that path leads farther and farther away from ourselves and from our inherent empathy and compassion. I mean, that I think that's actually a fact now. There's been studies about computers decreasing our levels of compassion. So the next one of these in this practice, the next practice is beneficial action. And we each have our own beneficial actions and ways of expressing that. So I'm going to skip the details of that. But when we get to identity action, which really means impartiality, identity action means not to be different, neither different from self nor from others. When we know identity action, self and others are one suchness. The basis of identity action is putting oneself in another's place by seeing our equality and interconnectedness. Shakyamuni Buddha said that each one of us loves ourselves, and we need to understand that we are not different from others. Therefore, we should not harm others. This awakening to the reality that we and others are the same is the origin of identity actions and impartiality, and it's also the origin of kind speech. So that's the fourth of these four embracing dharmas. And the Buddha languaged his teaching, even the Buddha languaged his teaching based on the person to whom he was talking. And when he sent his disciples to various districts, he instructed them to use their language to give the teachings. However, it was all of this care in using language was called skillful means. And according to Dogen and Ryokan, verbal expression is not merely a skillful mean. Skillful mean means that it's a good way to get things done or get something accomplished. And Dogen and Ryokan are saying that our use of language, our speech, is not just a skillful mean. It's not just a way to get something done. If we really, and this is this upcoming part is very important. If we really see the moon, and in Buddhism, the moon stands for reality. So if we really see reality, we see that the finger pointing to the moon is part of the moon. It's not that the moon is reality and the finger pointing is not. The finger or the words we use are part of reality. To distinguish between reality and the verbal expression of reality creates two separate things and makes reality itself more important than the expression, its expression using words. This is one of the most important points of Dogen's teaching. In Dogen Zenji's teaching, verbal expression of our direct experience is very important. He called this expression do toku. Do means to speak or say something. And he's saying that if we really experience something, we need to say something. We need to speak about that reality. I mean, his point is that unless we find a way to express what we experience in silence, like in contemplation, our experience is not genuine. He goes that far. Our insight is not deep enough, and we should continue sitting. Once we have a certain insight, we have to put it into words. Otherwise, our practice is not complete. It reminds me of in the practice of writing. You know, there are various stages in the writing, in the practice of writing, and the last stage is publication. And although I think the thought of publication is way too present in most writers' minds, and present not only too much but also too early, still it's the fifth of the of the five parts of the writing process. And in the same way, putting our insights into words, the words are the final part of our coming to understand reality. Ryokana Dogen said, if we think that the finger pointing to the moon and the moon are the expression of reality are two things, this is already dualism. For Dogen, studying sutras and texts is very important because there is no separation between language and reality. Both are important because the finger that points is part of what is pointed to. This is how Dogen and Ryokan understand reality, the moon, the way we express it using our words to communicate with other living beings is, I think, what Ryokan means when he says, there is neither finger nor moon because they are one thing. And I'd like to end with Tonin O'Connor's very moving prayer. Let us approach with joy the opportunity to speak appropriately, fully aware, and offer wisdom, perception, and kindness as best we can as we embrace the Buddha's right speech as part of our path to liberation for ourselves and others. So some of the most important points from today's talk. First, Zen priest Tonin O'Connor's words, compassion for beings, such a simple way of pointing to the impulse that lies behind right speech. And she's referring to what the Buddha said, compassion for beings. It's such a simple way of pointing to the impulse that lies behind right speech. And again, her words, it is natural for me to have sympathy with other beings. Since we are rowing in this boat together, we all belong. On the path, it is natural that I try to find speech that is appropriate and beneficial, for it is being offered to my companions. And third, another component of right speech, in addition to right silence, is right hearing. The degree to which we can hear beyond and beneath words is the degree to which our compassion can be activated. Just picturing hearing words and listening deeply, and then becoming activated, compassion, feeling compassion being activated. Then the fourth important point is the basis of identity action, that is impartiality. That's the last of the four endearing practices, the four beneficial practices. The basis of impartiality is putting oneself in another's place by seeing our equality and interconnectedness. Shakyamuni said that each one of us loves ourselves, and we need to understand that we are not different from others. Therefore, we should not harm others. Sort of like, duh. Fifth, it is not that the moon is reality and the finger that points is not. The finger, or the words we use, are part of reality. To distinguish between reality and the verbal expression of reality creates two separate things and makes reality itself more important than its expression using words. This is one of the most important points of Dogen's teaching. And sixth, Dogen's point that unless we find a way to express what we experience within silence, our experience is not genuine. Our insight is not deep enough, and we need to keep sitting. And actually, that same idea is why I offer each time, as I'm about to do right now, points for you to think about and ideally write about, the writing part being putting it into words. It gives you by asking you to do this each week and giving you ideas to use, I'm encouraging this exact point that Dogen is making, that unless we find a way to express what we experience in silence, our experience is not genuine, our insight is not deep enough, and we need to keep sitting. So here are some ideas for reflection during the week, and I wish for you to have the experience of trying to put them into words, your thoughts on these ideas, to try to put your thoughts on these ideas into words, and writing them down. It's like imprints them in your heart more exactly and deeply. And that's why I'm always talking about you writing down these things. So there are five of them. And the first one is, regarding have a nice day. In the smallest of ways, we've acknowledged the reality of one another's presence. And this is a tiny exchange of kind speech, however formulaic. Do you agree? Have you thought consciously about this aspect of your life? How do your casual words and how you say them stack up with how you'd like to speak to others? So I'm inviting you to really pay attention to your stock phrases, so to speak, and see what you think of them. Just see what you think of them. check them out, and then write about what you think about them and what your thoughts are after that. So secondly, for Ryokan as a poet and an expert on language, loving speech is his most important bodhisattva practice. And he wrote several long lists of admonitions regarding speech for himself and others. And so might you write your own several lists. So what is loving speech for you? Might you also list how you use loving speech in ways, how you can use loving speech in ways other than how you are already use it. You might also list words that you don't like to hear and that you would like to eliminate from your communication. Both. In general, that number two was about make it personal and make it very exact so that you can use it. When you start a list of admonitions about speech, keep adding to your list of admonitions. It will help raise your consciousness about what you're doing with your language. Thirdly, once you have an insight, you have to put it into words. Otherwise, your practice is not complete. And if you haven't already, begin to experiment with this. And it's useful to have a journal or some kind of record for your insights, because getting your words right will get your insight right. And actually not only right, but more integrated. So you get your insight, but when you put them into written words, especially, your insight will actually enhance. You'll start, writing is a process of discovery. So you'll start discovering more in what you already saw. And then, and also as you're writing, you're integrating. The fourth idea for this week and this week's reflection is this idea of Dogen's, there's no separation between language and reality. Both are important because the finger that points to the moon reality is part of the moon reality. This is how Dogen and Ryokan understand reality. There is neither finger nor moon because they are one thing. And so what do you think? Do you agree? And most importantly, how does your experience support whatever you think? How does your experience justify whatever your opinion is? Because this is really about you and your life, and you're basing your life in reality. Because we so much don't in this today's world. And the last one, instead of have a nice day or how are you, make up your own stock phrases. Even though they're stock, they'll be yours and more meaningful. I wonder if you have questions.
So the first comment that we have is, when I hear that it is natural for me to have sympathy with other beings, since we are rowing this boat together, I flinch. I don't feel this way. In my head, I often am criticizing others, even judging them. I suspect this person has been sitting Zazen for a long time. When I do sit, I don't really feel any change though.
Never forget, Zazen is doing Zazen. You are not sitting Zazen. So when you sit, you're taking the posture of the Buddhas and our ancestors, and they're not ordinary beings. So when Zazen is doing Zazen, many things happen on levels that you're not aware of. And you don't need to understand. If you sit, your body will totally understand. Actually, afterwards, you're no longer actually the same person. So don't worry, this is not a race. But I feel for you. I feel for you because I felt the same way for so long. But I don't feel that way anymore at all. Maybe that will be some encouragement. That's all.
Thank you, Gail. So the second comment that we got is, I loved Ryokan's poem about the pine tree. His empathy is contagious. He has such a sweetheart, but I don't. I mean, I sometimes do, but on the whole, I think I have a neutral heart or slightly cold heart.
Zazen isn't a fix, but over time, things will change. Things will change for you. Try using Dogen's idea of stopping and intentionally arousing compassion and then speak. It will exercise your compassion muscle for one thing and get that part going, which is what you're addressing right now. But it's also in line with modern methods of movement and being, like the Alexander technique. Alexander was really big on this idea of stopping. And what he was referring to is our automatic habitual movements that are really they're not in correct alignment with gravity and our bodies. And so we are harming ourselves and digging our grave more and more deeply with every incorrect movement. And so he says, stop before you do your habit, stop. And then don't do your habit, do something else. And that's really what I'm saying about, or what I'm reflecting, I'm emphasizing that that Dogen is kind of saying, stop. Before you say your habit words, stop and check in with the compassion that's there in your heart, and it is. And so I'm suggesting that you can try this. You're saying you don't have any compassion there, you just have a cold heart. But I'm saying you haven't tried hard enough. You do have compassion there. You know, for a very long time, I also thought that I didn't have any compassion. I just thought I was lacking the compassion gene. And then all of a sudden I started feeling it at unexpected times. And I don't think it's still all the way there, but it's way more there than it used to be. So I do know what you mean, but I also know what I mean, which is that if you pay more attention to it, it will change. It changes under your attention. Actually, our attention, it's like a kind word. It's like a touch. You're just like touching another. And in this case, you're touching your own heart and making it come alive. That's all.
Thank you, Gail. So here's a question that we got. When you put your insights into words, do you ever feel as if you're limiting them or squeezing the insight into the confines of the limited meanings of the words?
Yes, I definitely have experienced that a lot. In fact, it made me understand how limited a word can be, in the sense of the word is the word, and it's just the word. It's not, it isn't necessarily what you're thinking in choosing that word. So we have to be extremely careful in our choice. And unfortunately, English, I love English, but English is lacking in subtlety of nuances. For example, I think in English, there's only one word for love, but in Tibetan, there's like 15 words for love. In other words, there's so many different subtleties of, well, if you use this word for love, that's not that word, that's not love, but it's another word, then you're implying such and such. And in English, we don't get there in English. And in Japanese, one word will have many nuances, and you have to figure out which nuance is being intended by the context. And so translators, that's why I read you three translations of Dogen, because each translator can find deeper and deeper meanings in any one Japanese word. But in English, it's usually this or that, and I'm sorry to say, not always. So how did I get off on that? Whether experiencing words as limited as opposed to reality itself. But Dogen is saying that our language, whatever our words are, he's not saying this word is correct or more correct than that word. He's saying that a word using language is as much real. A word is as real as the moon, which stands for reality. With it, the word holds our entire reality. And I've definitely experienced that despite the equivocations. The word holds our entire reality. There isn't this dualistic thing of the words describing the moon is different from the moon. They're one thing. And if you're not experiencing that, I know this sounds trite, but do more zazen and see if you can find how that's so. That's all, but thank you. Thank you for raising that point. It's one I struggled with for years. That's all.
So we got another one. Somebody shared that I really like the idea of creating our own stock phrases. Can you share some you've made for yourself?
Let's see. Of course, my mind goes blank as soon as you ask. I think for myself, what I've really created are little prayers. And so it isn't like a stock phrase for others. And I've shared some of my prayers already, but I'll make them as reminders for myself. And so now when I'm practicing Dogen's suggestion of stop and get in touch with compassion before you speak to others, I guess, just it's not a stock phrase to the other when I finally do speak to them, but it's more a message to myself that, wait, stop, like that. I'm not answering your question because I can't really think of any that I've made. I'm sure I've made some because I really detest the one I detest the most is how has your day gone so far? Oh my God. I mean, I still if I had a gun, and it was all okay, I would just shoot the other person. Don't say that. But I'm sorry. I can't answer your question. I haven't made one in a long time.
Thank you, Gail. So the next one that we have is, since I've been listening to these talks, I've started to be more intentional about everything, including who I want to have a friend, who I want to have as a friend, for example, who I want to work through disagreements and conflicts with, what work I want to do, what vocations I want to have. I didn't really realize how unconscious much of my life was. The talk on right intention was particularly useful. Thank you.
Once you clarify a core principle and get rid of what's not that, it's easier to take ownership of your life and to take better care of how you're doing things because, this is my life. It's sort of like cleaning your room and getting rid of all the clutter. And then identifying, now the things in my room are my life. Each thing in my room has a bearing on something important to me in my life. And this idea of clarifying and getting rid of things in your life that are, they aren't current. They aren't current for you. And that can be even people in your life who are no longer vibrant and relevant to you. Certainly what your life's work is, your right livelihood. People struggle about that a lot. Even your vocations. What hobbies do you, what do you spend your time on when you're not working? Anyway, I thank you for saying that you benefited from that talk. Right intention is so important. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. This will probably be the last question. And the question is, I find myself and therefore my care with speech deteriorating with the pandemic. I'm much more sloppy and have lost my feelings of compassion. I guess this is just my worry, not really a question.
You know, recently I heard a talk by a priest who felt trapped by the pandemic and by not being, he can't go out to eat, he can't travel, he can't visit with friends. And as a result of this unexpected reprieve, he decided instead to do, accomplish something wonderful. So instead of complaining about all the things he can't do now, he also has more time. Instead of doing those things, he has more time. And he decided to accomplish something wonderful. And this idea is so pleasing, not only for now, but for the potential of indelible change that doing something wonderful brings to one's psyche. After doing something wonderful, you're not the same person as someone who hasn't done something wonderful. So even our fascia is different. So just think about that. It's a great idea. It's a great idea for enlivening and refreshing yourself in this difficult time. Thank you for attending today. And I want to thank my team, Brian and Sahar and Brendan, without whose very hard work these talks would not be happening. Bye for now. I hope I see you next week.